The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Will Fleming and Joe Castiglione certainly earned their pay today with a spring training home debut for the Red Sox that took over 3 hours, 21 total runs, 29 total hits, 3 hours and 7 minutes. But a win is a win is a win. And we welcome you in here on WEEI. Dan Ball with you. Thanks for spending some time here with us as it's just after 4 o'clock, 4:21 to be exact, here on February the 22nd, 2026. The final show here on WEEI this afternoon before the snowpocalypse here in the greater Boston area and beyond. So I echo right off the bat what Will Fleming ended his broadcast with. If you haven't hunkered down by now, make sure you do so very soon, because especially if you're in the southern part of the state, headed towards the Cape and headed down towards the Mansfield area specifically, looks like you're in for quite the next 24 hours. So grab your food, grab your drinks, grab everything you need for a cozy 24 hours. And thanks for spending the beginning of it here with us on WEEI. And you can join the conversation at 617-779-7937. I have you up until 6 o'clock here this afternoon into evening. And right off the bat from the 774, hey, ball game, USA, USA, USA. That is verbatim the text line in our opening text here on our show. Hello to you from the 774, because the United States are gold medalists in men's hockey and women's hockey. Both sides for the first time ever. First gold since 1980 for the men. Just the third time overall. Man, that fires me up. Attaboy, Tristan. Well timed. My man Tristan Andrew back behind the glass here today, riding with me. What a day it's been. Now, if the United States had lost, would I come on here complaining about the start time? Probably. I would spend a lot more time complaining about 3-on-3 overtime in a gold medal game. That's for damn sure. But neither of which matter, because the United States is gold medal winning in men's hockey here in 2026. What an awesome game to cap off what was just a tremendous tournament on the men's side and the women's side in hockey for this year's Olympiad. Tristan, did you watch the game? How much of the game did you catch? Where did you watch the game this morning?
Well, I will admit, Dan, I kind of was late to bed last night, so okay. Unfortunately, I missed the beginning of it, but I woke up just in time for overtime,
okay.
And I got to experience that about as live as my DVR would let me.
Okay, you know what? I like that. As long as you saw some of it, that's fine. And I mean, you missed.
It was one of the great hockey games ever played, if you ask me.
Absolutely, 100%. And Connor Hellebuyck turned in what was one of the greatest goaltending performances of all time. He set the American NHL goaltender record for saves in an Olympic game, I believe, is the number that he set today. I'll go and double check that, because we'll talk hockey a little bit later on. I do want to get into the Red Sox here, but what a day. What a day to be a hockey fan. What a day to be an American. And what a day, hopefully, to begin for the men and to continue for the women, dominance for the United States on the international hockey stage. That's really where I'm hoping this goes. And I'm really, really hoping that the NHL can try to bottle some of this up when it comes to the rest of the regular season into the playoffs, and hopefully building a little bit of momentum for the sport. Just a little bit, but we'll get into all of that as the United States has won the gold. And what a couple weeks it was for Freebird and the Eagle Screech here on the station. Also, one of my favorite things that we've done on the afternoon show to this point. Like, come on. I mean, come on. God, I'm going to miss it, but that's okay, because we're going out with a bang here on this Sunday.
USA. USA! USA!
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. I can't hear it too many times. There is not enough times that I can hear that particular song. Unbelievable. So let's get into the Red Sox. Couple ups, couple downs from this game here against the Toronto Blue Jays, as Boston has won their first two in the spring. The ups, loved how Jarren Duran looked. Hitting the baseball today. Swing looked great. Line drive seemed like he had plenty of speed. The swing was looking good in the early going. So I mean, there is still that player that finished top 10 in MVP 2 years ago in there somewhere. And, you know, you wonder after a season's worth of what, not even if Jaren Duran is going to get traded. It was more when, to where, and for whom he was going to get traded. Does an offseason in which he seems to be constantly on the trade block but not moved act as a vote of confidence for the Red Sox, for their now seemingly part-time left fielder and part-time designated hitter? And is there some of the 2024 magic that can be recaptured? I know that, you know, a lot of Red Sox fans are just kind of out on him. He's kind of just the odd man out. But what if he ends up proving people wrong? And how much does that change things? If I'm not even saying you get, you know, an 8 WAR player like he was 2 years ago, but what if instead of a 250 hitter, it's 270? And what if hitting third kind of opens up a little bit more power and aggression at the plate, and all of a sudden you have some version of that weapon that you had 2 years ago in your lineup this year? I'm not saying that an improved performance from Jaren Duran is the difference between you winning the division and competing for a World Series, but I mean, it certainly does change the dynamic of your lineup when he's going at his best. So I'm fascinated by that. Again, this is extrapolating based on one performance in a spring training game, but it does make you wonder, what does a refreshed and maybe more confident and more secure 2026 Duran have to offer? And is it just temporary? Are the Red Sox going to play him in left fields more times than Roman Anthony to start the season to drive his trade value up? Or do they really see this arrangement working in the long term? It's interesting. So that's a player, obviously, that jumped off the page for Duran, 2 for 3, scored a run as part of his day-to-day, drove in, did not drive in anybody, did score a run as part of what was an 11-10 Red Sox win. How about Brian Bello, though? An inning and a third, 4 hits, 4 runs, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, a nice round ERA of 27. So an interesting point that was made at the end of the broadcast as I was listening to Will and Joe do their sign-off is you're still a part of a group that has some pitching depth. And now all of a sudden you've actually added a frontline starter to pair with Garrett Crochet. So instead of it being where you were at the end of the season, which was Crochet, Bayo, and then kind of figure out the rest with Lucas Giolito and Peyton Tolley and Connelly Early and all that kind of stuff, now you've signed Ranger Suarez, you've acquired via trade Sonny Gray, and then you have Bayo. And then you have just one more spot remaining between Tolley and Early and now Johan Oviedo and Patrick Sandoval and Carter Crawford and, you know, these guys that are going to push Bayo for reps, for spots on the depth chart, for starts. And it just makes you wonder. I mean, he's signed to the kind of ticket that would ensure that he is going to be one of your 5 best starters to start the season. But I would hope that there is a little sense of urgency for Brian Bello, given what the Red Sox did this offseason. They were in dire need of a power bat to add to the middle of this lineup. You don't sign Alonso, you don't sign Kyle Tucker, you don't sign Bo Bichette, and you let Alex Bregman walk after trading Rafael Devers. Your answer in your lineup was Wilson Contreras and just kind of running it back with the group that you had and hoping for the best when it comes to actually hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Meanwhile, and you also didn't really address your bullpen to the point where it does seem like, as Will was kind of surmising during the broadcast, you probably will add one of the remaining free agent left-handers that's on the market. And just to give a little bit of insight into that, that's 32-year-old former Red Sox prospect Jalen Beeks, who last year with Arizona in a number of games, over 60 games, 5-3 record, 3.77 ERA. That's pretty good. I like what that could possibly add. Danny Coulomb, 36 years old, last year, a tale of two seasons. Starts with Minnesota, 1.16 ERA in 40 games. Then goes to Texas, who was in the midst of trying to compete for a wild card spot, 5.25 ERA in 15 games. Before that, was extremely reliable in two seasons prior with Baltimore, 2.81 and 2.12 ERA. So if you think you can get the Minnesota and Baltimore Danny Coulomb, then that's a guy you take a look at. Joey Lucchese, known to many Mets fans as Joey Fuego, 3.76 ERA with the Giants last year. And then if you want to run it back with Justin Wilson, finished in 61 games with a 3.35 ERA, but he's 38. So I would guess if the Red Sox trusted Justin Wilson to repeat what he did last year, he'd be a member of the Boston Red Sox right now. So I've got my eye on Jalen Beeks. I think out of that group, that's the guy that seems to be coming off of the best and most consistent performance, and especially given the fact that you're probably going to throw, if things go well, high 50s to low 60s games as that other lefty, other than Aroldis Chapman and seemingly Yovani Moran, who seems to be kind of in that conversation as well. So that tangent aside, you let players walk from your bullpen, and now your bullpen is kind of gone from a strength to a weakness. Your lineup was in desperate need of some pop, and you didn't do that. But specific to Brian Baio, you now have two starting pitchers that the Red Sox have brought in who could very easily slot in ahead of Baio in your rotation. Like if you broke camp based on that starting effort for Brian Baio, if you broke camp with Crochet, Suarez, Gray, and Baio as your four, would you be all that surprised? So with Tolley and Early and everybody that I just mentioned kind of nipping at the heels of Brian Baio, I would have hoped for a lot more today, and I am going to continue to hope for a lot more before the World Baseball Classic to maybe see him finally.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Take that step. It was unfair of us to attach the moniker Baby Pedro to him right off the bat. It's nearly impossible for anybody to live up to that kind of moniker, but it's because he flashed that kind of elite potential with the movement on his pitches, with his pitch mix, with the way that he can, when he's at his best, overpower guys. That just hasn't stuck consistently. He was borderline unpitchable. It was just the rule of the roost from the beginning of the season through the end of May last year that he could not complete five innings. I remember I did the pregame show, Sick Brag Bro, and my lock of the game was that he'd get 15 outs. He'd get through five innings. It was against the Braves. I think he went 3 2/3 or maybe got into the fourth. He got shelled. And then all of a sudden, it just clicked. And down the stretch from basically June through the end of the regular season, he was awesome. But then when the playoffs come around, all of a sudden he just regresses into that shell of what was supposed to be a great pitcher. So can I trust you to be the guy who was supposed to make 30 starts, have an ERA in the threes, and give me a similar output every time you're out there? I feel like that's the biggest question. Can I get the same thing every 5 days? Can I get you close to six innings and three runs? Which isn't great, but it's the textbook definition of a quality start. Can I get 30-ish quality starts? I'm sure some will spike better and some will spike worse, but if my general rule of thumb is that I can trust you to be a top three guy in my rotation, I really need to see that this year for me to continue to write you in pen in the Red Sox rotation versus starting to look at you as a trade chip that can bring me in somebody who gives me a better chance to compete for a championship. Now, this is also a Red Sox team that isn't going to win games 8-7 this year. So it puts all the more emphasis on Crochet and Suarez and Gray and Brian Baio and whoever else they choose to round out in that fifth spot. It puts a lot of emphasis on them to be at their best for 30 starts. You simply have to do that in order for this team to compete for a wild card spot this year. If this rotation falters, you are dead in the water this year. Simply dead in the water. So for Brian Baio, an inning in a third, four hits, four runs, a walk, and two strikeouts, just is not going to cut it this time around. But some interesting other notes that came from the general Red Sox circles over the last, call it, 48 hours. First of all, the lineup that was rolled out today. Roman Anthony, your DH, Trevor Story at short, Jaron Duran in left, Wilson Contreras at first, Willier Abreu in right, Caleb Durbin's your third baseman, Rafaela in center, Narvaez your catcher, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, IKF, at second base. Alex Cora said via Christopher Smith of Mass Live, quote, just trying to win this league. So I just felt that's a good way to set it up. But yeah, it's something I envision talking about. Could this be an opening day lineup? And it just happened that for the first time in years, what you see early is what you're probably going to see on opening day. So this is the group. Anthony Story, Duran Contreras, Abreu, Durbin, Rafaela, Narvaez, and Kiner Falefa. The one potential tweak I could see is Rafaela, who has been basically a career nine hitter and seems to thrive when you put him in center field hitting ninth every single day. You give him that kind of stability, it seems like that's when he is at his best, or at least gives him his best chance to be consistent. The one tweak that I would expect, if things go according to plan, is that Marcelo Meyer starts at second base instead, and he's your seven hitter. Then you've got Narvaez or Connor Wong, depending on who's catching that day, hitting eighth, and Rafaela is your nine hitter. So maybe this is the look that you get against left-handers, and then when Meyer is in, you get that look that I just mentioned against right-handers. Maybe that's the way that they're leaning. Now, Fernando Perez started today. He's a right-hander, but again, they went through, 10 pitchers in total, so it's hard to say, oh yeah, they're doing that based on the starter on the mound. It was going to be one guy each of the nine innings, if you're lucky. And it took more than that for this game to mercifully get over, as Will Fleming said. So other than that, that's your lineup. And I want to love it. I really, really, really want to love this group. I had a lot of fun going on the ride of finally seeing the Red Sox compete for and earn a playoff spot last year. I had a ton of fun as part of that. But I can only tell you that I like it. I like certain elements of it. I think, you know, Roman Anthony as your DH is going to be a lot of fun. There are more betting slips that have been placed on Roman Anthony to win MVP than any other player in the American League. He's only got like the eighth best odds, ninth, tenth, somewhere around there. But more people are betting on Anthony to win at the value that he's currently at than any other player. Story, you're just crossing your fingers for more health because you finally saw last year what happens when he stays healthy. Duran is a complete wild card to me. Complete wild card. I think it's interesting to get him a longer look in that number three spot. And that's kind of regardless of if you're playing against righties or lefties. If you get him a bit of a longer stretch there, I'd be curious to see what he can pull off in a season. Contreras, I really like. I wish he wasn't your main offensive ad, but I really like what he brings offensively and defensively in terms of consistency. Pretty much regarded as a top five first baseman defensively in a number of metrics last year. Abreu, I think, gives you the best chance to add the pop that you so desperately need as part of this group. And then 7, 8, 9 is kind of just roll the dice. We'll see what you get. I don't know a darn thing about Caleb Durbin. If he can bring anything more than what was a slightly below league average bat. I know he was a rookie of the year finalist. I really think it was more of just a lack of competition around him than anything else. I think he's a starter for now. But I would certainly like to see you get yourself into the position near the trade deadline where you can acquire an infielder and he can then become your super utility guy. I think that gives me a much better feeling. Then Narvaez, again, big fan of what I think he's capable of now with a full year as a starter under his belt, and second base is going to be a rotation. It's fine. It's going to win some games. This lineup is going to go through stretches similar to last year where you go, whoa. What has been put into the Red Sox Wheaties this week? They're going to go through those stretches. You have streaky hitters here. And we saw last year when the snowball was rolling downhill, it picked up maybe a bad example to use with the weather that's coming in the next 24 hours. But when the ball was rolling downhill, it picked up speed exponentially. This group was a very, very motivation driven. It was momentum driven was the word I was looking for, but very momentum driven in terms of how they scored. They were rip roaring at certain points and dead quiet because they didn't have the offensive catalyst, the game changer, the guy who could change the game with one swing of the bat. They didn't really have that guy last year, and they still don't have this guy this year. So what you're going to see is a 2-week stretch where they are hot as a pistol, and then a 2-week stretch where you're losing games 2-0, 3-1. 1-0. And it's going to lead to 84-ish wins is kind of the number I've seen bandied. ESPN's Paul Hemikidis told me, I think it was last weekend, that he had him at 80 Cooper Boardman had them at 90, and I've heard, you know, I've heard mid 80s pretty consistently. And that will give you a sniff at the wild card. But I wish I was looking at that group of nine and going, you're ready to take that next step. You're ready. I don't even need you to catch the Toronto Blue Jays in 1 year. I just need you to catch the Yankees and then be the main team that's nipping at the heels of the Blue Jays in your division. That's all I really wanted to see from you. And you're relying on the Yankees, given that they're kind of running it back with their group last year, to just naturally regress. And you're relying on your group to progress, because both teams kind of just said, yeah, that same group of nine that kind of engaged in a pillow fight in the wild card series. Yeah, that's enough for me. That's all we need. I'll rely on pitching and defense for two of the worst defensive teams in baseball the last 3 years. I'll rely on that and just, you know, get our runs in bunches with one swing of the bat in the case of Aaron Judge for the Yankees, and just kind of chip away death by a thousand cuts for the Red Sox. It's kind of where this group is. It's lukewarm, and you're really relying on your starting pitching, and I would have loved a much more confident start to the spring for Brian Baio based on what we saw today. One more element that I want to get to before we can transition to that unbelievable gold medal game and the unbelievable Olympic tournament that we saw on the ice here over the last couple of weeks. One more element, and it's Marcelo Meyer. And Alex Cora didn't quite give Meyer the most ringing endorsement that you would have expected for a guy with the kind of potential that Meyer has flashed. We'll talk about that and the implications at second base, the one position that seems to still, no matter how many times you slice it after Dustin Pedroia, remain a revolving door for the Red Sox. Plus, we'll take your calls. Any thoughts on the Red Sox if you have them through the rest of the hour at 617-779-7937. Am I being too optimistic? Am I being too pessimistic on the Red Sox? Plenty more Sox talk coming up next.
It's cold out there today. Colder than the Grand Slam bat flip that Vlad Jr. unleashed against the Yankees in the ALDS. But do you know where it's toasty and warm, and where baseball's hot stove is brewing along? The Morning Lineup Podcast. We're here Monday through Friday, first thing in the morning, to deliver you all the trade, signings, and news from the MLB offseason. All in under 10 minutes on anywhere you get your podcasts. Come in from the cold and join us.
Back here on WEEI, Dan Ball with you. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Red Sox, winners now of three straight games, if you count the Northeastern drubbing. And, you know, I saw people on Twitter, Tristan, at the beginning of Friday, the true pessimistic Red Sox fan, when they were losing 2-1 to Northeastern, like, oh boy.
Here we go again.
Here we go.
I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of almost the real just like battered and bruised, well, quote unquote fan. I don't even really call you a fan. If you're like, yeah, I want to see Northeastern beat the Red Sox.
Yeah, if you have a grand, you know, expansive take on the 2026 Red Sox after one scrimmage against Northeastern,
right.
I think you have some deeper things to consider about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. There are plenty of professionals that can help. I know I've heard better help ads here on this station.
I was
going to
say, the station advertises some.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're available for you 24/7. So 1 o'clock first pitch, 7 o'clock first pitch, your therapist is there for you if that's how you feel. But anyways, aside from that point, Red Sox beat Northeastern. They're now 2-0 in Grapefruit League play. The scuttlebutt going around a couple of days ago came when Alex Cora was asked about Marcelo Meyer. With Marcelo, we'll give him the baton, but he has to run. If he wants to be the starting second baseman in Cincinnati, there's a lot of work to do. It's not a given that he's second baseman or third baseman for the team. There's a lot of things that he needs to show us this spring, and we expect him to do that because he's that talented. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys that can do the job. It's a really interesting conversation to be had about Meyer, and then just the general arrangement of everything that isn't first base for the Red Sox. Without the presence of Alex Bregman at third, it really gives you, instead of one position in the infield that you're kind of rotating through, it gives you two decisions that you have to make on a game in and game out basis. So you have Caleb Durbin, who you acquired. You have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who you signed. You have Marcelo Meyer, who you drafted. You have Romy Gonzalez, who is the incumbent, who is kind of off to a slow start and I think is working through some things here in the early part of camp, which is a shame. Because if you don't have him at 100%, that ended up being a very quietly, extremely instrumental part of your success last year was Romy Gonzalez. And then I think there's also the ultimate X factor, which is Seydon Rafaela. And I understand that Alex Cora told the media earlier this week that Rafaela and Willy Abreu are, when they're in the lineup, they're everyday outfielders. And I get that, and I want that, and I appreciate that, but I don't believe that because things change. Injuries happen. Guys go down. And you also have you have two of your four spots in the infield that are just gigantic question marks right now. Durbin, you now have a rookie year's worth of statistics in front of you. He was a promising prospect before he got moved from the Yankees to the Brewers. Came up, had a very good rookie year. Doesn't, you know, hit the ball very hard, but plus defender, can get on base, and seems like he has another gear that he can get to. So you're hoping that he's a starter more times than he's not. I think Romy Gonzalez is in there against lefties, assuming that he's healthy. And then there's the question of Marcelo Meyer, who ends up being roughly a 220 hitter in the games that he played. Looked very, very good defensively at third base. But he is kind of your ultimate infield X factor, because if you can get him to take a step forward and have a fully healthy season, which I do ultimately think begins in AAA. And I think there's two reasons for that. You'd like him to get some positive at-bats under his belt to start the season and really be able to get the feeling of dominating. I think you'd love to see that for a month to 6 weeks, and we know that the Red Sox love to manipulate service time. So if they can check that box and you can use that as a chance for Meyer to get some reps at second base, get comfortable there defensively, and get the bat to the point where he's ready for major league competition, then I think you call him up, you install him as your starting second baseman, and hopefully you just let him sit there. And I'm hoping that even implies some kind of matchup against lefties. I know that was a crusade that I took on for weeks last year, that Meyer should be playing every day regardless of righty versus lefty. Probably in hindsight, maybe a little too strong on that. You also now have a full season of knowing that Romy Gonzalez is a damn good hitter. So if that's the one spot where you want to emphasize, hey, I'm going to go with my platoon here and I'm going to get the best out of both of these guys, I think I can understand where you're coming from, because the injury risk with Meyer is no joke. So if you can lighten the burden on him ever so slightly, say it's two out of every three games, you know, two righties for a lefty, something like that. If you can do that, I think it gives you that plan. Start him in the minors for a month to 6 weeks, get the swing going, get him comfortable at second, then call him up, and then he's your second baseman against righties with Romy Gonzalez as your second baseman against lefties. I think that gives you the best chance to get the best out of him, because you are running on borrowed time as it pertains to Trevor Story being your everyday shortstop. I think there's a breakdown factor that you have to factor into all of this, to where you could be talking about the 2027 Red Sox, knowing that Story's under contract for another 2 years after this one, with Story being at second, and hopefully Meyer ready to be installed as your shortstop. That's what I would guess that your hope is, but he needs to be able to start somewhere at the end of March and finish at the end of September, hopefully the end of October somewhere, and not have an injury that derails his season. I need to see that, because from the majors down to the minors, at every level, there's been something that's kept him from playing a full season and really just going through a natural progression of his development. So if you can get Marcelo Meyer somewhere in the, with time down in AAA and a platoon factored 90 to 100 games, if you could get him into triple digits, maybe even wishful thinking at this point, but if you can, Romy plays the rest and you rotate in Caleb Durbin, IKF, and whoever else you need to, I think that gives you the best chance for Meyer to take a step forward in 2027. And that also implies, yes, Tristan, go ahead.
Caleb Durbin last year with Milwaukee, obviously you're talking about him right now. He, 11 homers in 136 games, 53 runs batted in, WAR of 2.8 last year in his rookie year with Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, useful player, but not a guy not a guy that I feel overly comfortable about being relied upon for 150 plus games.
Sure, but like, how often does it come up that a rookie of the year candidate, you know, like Durbin, is on the trade market? How often does that come up? I think that's a very shrewd move on Breslow's part. I think that's going to be one of the cogs in the machine that is the 26 Sox.
I agree, and I hope that you're right. I just, the natural pessimist in me sees a Rookie of the Year finalist be on the trade block and asks, why? Because wouldn't the, theoretically speaking, wouldn't the Milwaukee Brewers like to have a Rookie of the Year finalist as their everyday third baseman? That's just that, and I hope that I'm just being negative just for, you know, being a battered and bruised Red Sox fan. I wonder what Milwaukee didn't see in him that the Red Sox did, if that makes sense.
Gift horses, man.
Yeah, there. Hey. You know what? You're honestly, you're right about that. But it's an interesting conversation. It really is, because you have two of your four spots in the infield that are, I think, for my money, completely up for grabs. And then you have Story, who you're hoping can stay healthy, and if not, that makes it even more confusing. And then there's the Tristan Casas factor in it all. And I have zero idea what that looks like. All I can tell you is, get your tickets in Worcester from the beginning of their season, I'm assuming it's the beginning of April, late March, early April, through like the end of May. Because if you're seeing potentially Meyer and Casas and Christian Campbell and all these guys that are like may factor into the Red Sox and may not, and then you could get Toley or Early, or I know Oviedo has options back if he doesn't make it as your fifth starter. Like, there's some good talent that you could see with the at the Woo this year. So just put a pin in that if you're looking for the family experience, but you don't want to pay Fenway Park prices, and I can't blame you for that. Okay, we'll leave the Red Sox conversation there. Again, 11-10 victors, the Boston Red Sox over the Toronto Blue Jays in the spring. They are back at it tomorrow afternoon, 1:05 first pitch against the Tampa Bay Rays on the road. And that is how things are looking heading into another busy week of Red Sox spring training baseball. You heard it. You heard the eagle screech. You heard it. We had Freebird coming in because the United States has won the gold. We'll talk about it and what this could mean for the United States program and hopefully the NHL, because I think there's an interesting element to this, and we'll talk about that next.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze. Let's love.